Welcome, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the InfoWars Nightly News. Today is Tuesday, July 17th, 2012. I'm your host, Aaron Dykes.
Tonight, outrage after local news channel helps public identify gun owners using a system similar to that identifying sex offenders. Then, Iceland has hired an ex-cop to hunt down the bankers that wrecked its economy. And the Pentagon releases comics for globalist domination. All this, plus we replay a special interview from Jeffrey Smith, one of the leading food safety and genetically modified researchers in the country. Grab your pencil and paper because you won't want to miss this interview. All this and more on the InfoWars Nightly News.
Tonight in the news, outrage after a local news station helps the public identify gun owners. It's as if they're sexual offenders, and there's a registry showing where their homes are located, what streets they live on, as WRAL in Raleigh, North Carolina has a whole database honing in on the fact that rural people own more guns than city people, and that the concealed permit carriers are located basically on the fringes of these different areas, as if it's some problem. But they try to demonize gun ownership as if this is a liberal thing the government has allowed to go on and they should rein it in, and how really concealed weapons owners are the dangerous people, that they're somehow criminals or suspected criminals. And so you've got concerned resident David Knight. He's actually one of our reporter contest entries. He was towards the top. He almost won the contest. He sent us an email warning that although street numbers are not shown yet, they point out that most of the carry permits are in rural areas. On my road, for example, there's only four addresses. On other roads where you could find on there, there's maybe one or two homes, basically tipping off criminals to where there's weapons in the home and where there isn't, and allowing them to be persecuted by people who are terrified of firearms despite the Second Amendment. This information has only previously been available through written requests to the state's Bureau of Investigation, but now it's being publicized in effort to basically demonize gun ownership. Knight says the news station's act of helping the public identify gun owners is an attempt to name and shame, while suggesting the Second Amendment advocates pose a threat akin to sex offenders, which is ridiculous. However, this article out of North Carolina cites the New York Times, which has totally demonized concealed carry, made a case study of North Carolina to try to convince the public that those who hold weapons are the criminals, when, of course, real criminals don't register their guns, they don't buy them on the market, they don't go through background checks. But you've got Gail McNeil, executive director of North Carolinians Against Gun Violence, claiming that concealed weapons permit holders are not as law-abiding as they appear to be. And then they link to the New York Times report from December 2011, where they say guns in public and out of sight, and they highlight the story of one individual who randomly shot at a biker because he was hogging up too much of the road, really shooting at him without any reason. Now, he pled guilty to assault with a deadly weapon. I assume he's in prison. But they directly link him to more than 240,000 concealed carry permit owners in North Carolina. And they say, while it's a small percentage of them, many of them are criminals. And it goes on to cite 2,400 permit holders, 1% of that number, as having been convicted of felonies or misdemeanors. But then they go on to explain that of 2,400, really only 200 were convicted of felonies, and 10 of those 10 people were murderers among 240,000 concealed permit carriers. I wonder what the number is among the general public. But they just want you to think these are the criminals, these are the people who are going to commit crimes, so they're trying to create a scare about it. In fact, in the WARL article, Peggy Elrod, who's basically a gun shop owner, says some of them believe this is the criminal element, people who train to use guns. So you've got the whole permit process, which turns the right to bear arms into a so-called privilege. Then they try to demonize the privilege, say they've been too loose with the rules, and basically saying they need to rein in people who are even allowed to have concealed carry permits, when you can always open carry, you can always bear arms. But they, of course, don't want it to appear that way. That's okay. The UN gun grab is coming. Turning to Iceland, this is a positive story, actually, because in all the other parts of the Western world, they refuse to even suggest that bankers are part of the problem of this worldwide depression that's looming. All the derivatives they traded to put all these countries in debt, in dire straits, to make the banks ready to collapse and to try to get the public to pay for the whole collapse of the whole thing. Well, that didn't happen in Iceland. They said no to the banker debt. And now they have a white-collar crime investigator, a former local police lieutenant named Ólafur Hauksson, who's going to be tracking down individuals who helped sink the country into the credit crunch. He's already brought a bunch of convictions, and he's going for more, including the former chief of staff of the country's finance minister, who was accused of insider trading charges. And they are not only tracking down the suspects, but help bringing the actual charges in the case to the court to make sure that things follow through in a reasonable manner. So Iceland really should be the model of how to keep your sovereignty in the midst of the financial crisis, how to not commit suicide by tying yourself to the bankers and drowning in a big lake. But instead, the media covers up Iceland and wants you to literally bow down to Goldman Sachs as they take over every other European country and get ready to do it here in the U.S. Just a very interesting story to keep our eye on. Now, Alex has a video just tearing apart Obama's latest speech where he says, if you produce something, you better thank the state for it, because the state basically helped you live, helped the sun come up, helped things happen in the modern world. Big indictment. Here's that video right now.
If you've been successful, you didn't get there on your own. I'm always struck by people who think, well, it must be because I was just so smart. There are a lot of smart people out there. It must be because I worked harder than everybody else. Let me tell you something. There are a whole bunch of hard-working people out there. If you were successful, somebody along the line gave you some help. There was a great teacher somewhere in your life. Somebody helped to create this unbelievable American system that we had that allowed you to thrive. Somebody invested in roads and bridges. If you got a business, that you didn't build that. Somebody else made that happen. The internet didn't get invented on its own. Government research created the internet so then all the companies could make money off the internet.
Barack Obama is bought and paid for by monopolistic capitalists who are anti-free market and who are extremely cold-blooded in their publicly stated orthodoxy of world corporate government, where they're exempt from all the laws they put on us. But Obama basically plays the part of a communist populist. We heard this from Lenin, Stalin, Mao, his mentor, the Marxist-Leninist Frank Marshall Davis. I mean, Obama brags about it in his book. Anybody who's read hardcore communist writings knows that the things that Obama covers in the speech he gave this weekend, campaign speech, is directly out of the Communist Manifesto and the planks of the Communist Manifesto. And if you read those planks, we're so close to it today. The issue is, this is not a movement of the grassroots. Read None Dare Call It Conspiracy. We sell it at InfoWars.com, written back in 71. It shows how Armin Hammer, David Rockefeller, all of them, his dad before him, funded Lenin and Stalin. It's now declassified. Our government helped put Mao into power. Look it up. In 49, he killed over 60 million people. They want thugs, whether they're fascist or communist, that control countries. Okay, Bill Clinton's mentor wrote Tragedy and Hope, 1,400 pages, head of Georgetown Political Science, breaking it down. This is the real world. But he gives this incredible speech and sells the population that, hey, collectivism is good. It's what makes things great. We know the type of collectivism that does not have the people's consent creates total nightmares. Every once in a while, if a crisis happens or something, you can see forms of collectivism that do create some breakthroughs. But generally, I'd say about 98% of the time, it is pure poison. And even if you have some philosopher king who directs some good things at a point, things degenerate later, and now those big systems of power that have been created and centralized are taken over by monopoly groups and mafia groups, and it creates a hellish situation. Look at every collectivist model. China, Russia, all these other countries that have done it. It produces tens of millions of dead. Now, you can go to InfoWars.com or LouRockwell.com and read this Comrade Obama, praise the state, ungrateful, individualist heathen. And remember now, 51% of the U.S. lives on a government paycheck. And I understand they took your money your whole life, and now you can say it's your money. The point is, they've got you under their control. But for Social Security and people out there, they're already devaluing your check with inflation. And wait till QE3 hits that they're just now starting to announce. So here's a clip of Obama, and then I'm going to break down some of the speech and the fact that he's visiting Austin today here on InfoWars Nightly News.
They know they didn't. If you've been successful, you didn't get there on your own. You didn't get there on your own. I'm always struck by people who think, well, it must be because I was just so smart. There are a lot of smart people out there. It must be because I worked harder than everybody else. Let me tell you.
All right, let's pause it right there. And he goes on and on. Remember, they've now got 51% and growing of the population totally dependent on government. I saw this number from LouRockwell.com and looked it up. It's true. Did you know that they've doubled the number of people on welfare in just 3.5 years? Doubled. Because, yes, the banksters in this monopoly economy are putting things into a depression, so a lot of people would be in trouble if they didn't have it. But they create an atmosphere where you've got to go to them for help. And then they can use that giant mob as a political army, just like they're now announcing the, quote, free government health care for the illegals, but citizens have to pay for it. That's now been announced. And, oh, old people won't get the treatment now because it's all rationed. The death panels, it's all being announced. But understand this, even if you believe in collectivism, they don't have the consent. This is an offshore banking cartel with people like Warren Buffett, the biggest single recipient of the banker bailout in 2008 through 2010. Look it up. It's New York Times, Wall Street Journal. He's quite proud of it. He's always saying, I'm rich. I don't pay enough taxes. Raise taxes on me. Because he knows they helped write the laws where he's exempt. People won't look at the fine print. He's basically exempt, just like Mitt Romney is, just like General Electric and Google are. Most of these companies pay zero tax. He used your tax money with the General Motors bailout to move it to Brazil, Eastern Europe, and China. 22 bill, Cadillac, and Volt. Look it up. You cannot make this up. So he's here telling you he's going to save you with big government with all these desperate people. But they're going to give you the opposite. It's a corporate blowout, a corporate takeover, a hostile takeover with communist rhetoric to try to appease people that are in bad shape, saying capitalism's the problem. You see Newsweek, Time, all of them say capitalism failed. It wasn't capitalism to have powerful elites come in and get rid of Glass-Steagall and allow themselves to create over $1,000 trillion in derivatives and then have their agents and government sign us onto their debts and then tell us that it's our debt. You understand? This is the domestication happening right now, continuing. I mean, this is amazing communist speech, folks.
There are a whole bunch of hard-working people out there.
Yeah, don't worry. Just like all these other countries that go into communism and socialism, soon you're not going to have a job. I see these comments sometimes on these YouTube videos going, yeah, in socialist countries, there's 100% employment, and everything's milk and honey. No, that's not how it works. It's so foolish, folks. They don't know about the rationing, the year and a half for a brain surgery that, you know, you need to get in 2 months or you're dead. They have no idea about the incredible unemployment. They have no idea about the hellishness. They have no idea because they're taught in government public schools that it's going to be milk and honey. So see, oh, everybody's hard work. You know, it's not the globalist's fault for destroying our currency and shipping our jobs overseas that hardworking people can't get ahead. No. It's anybody that's got a better job or more money than you do. People making $125,000 a year individually or quarter mil in a couple. That's who he's saying rich, people that aren't exempt. You understand? That's who the ultra rich are targeting, is the middle class. And then he's talking about the middle class like he's trying to save it.
If you were successful, somebody along the line gave you some help.
Well, yeah, but does that mean that, I mean, you're paying them. It's a free system. And believe me, you work hard in my operation, you get paid more, you move up. That's how things work. If the company keeps growing, but see, he's a globalist, they cheated everybody and shipped the jobs overseas.
There was a great teacher somewhere in your life. Somebody helped to create this unbelievable American system that we had that allowed you to thrive.
By the way, and this is the most important point, every place like New York, Chicago that they control is a hellhole for the general public and super hard to make it unless you're part of a special, you know, class like Wall Street. And believe me, that's a special clique to get into, you know, the highest levels of that. We've interviewed all the top people. So again, here they are creating this system where the mega banks get free money and we don't. But nobody knows about that real form of discrimination. Here are the banksters declaring they've conquered the world. And Obama is talking about how you didn't get there. He says, if you've got a business, you didn't build that. That's a quote. Somebody else made that happen. That's a quote. If you've got a business, you didn't build that. Somebody else made that happen. Continuing. Again, the state is not God. It creates nightmares 98% of the time. And if for brief times it doesn't, then later that same system becomes corrupt. And it is so amazing to see this happen. Nobody wants to live in the cities that these guys control. They're absolute hell holes when the big city mafia model gets in control. And everybody's running from those states and those cities. And the globalists, again, hate this country. They want to collapse it so they can control it. And it is so disgusting to see Obama up there pushing this when it is not the free market that did this. It's the people that control him that engineered it on record as a planned global meltdown. And now they're going to offer socialism and then communism as the solution to the crisis they created when they're offshore and globalist and exempt from the communism they're bringing into Western Europe and the United States, which is nothing but a takeover and a re-education of the country and a breaking of the back of the independent spirit. He's coming to Austin, Texas. In fact, he's here right now. He just landed. We're sending our crew out. We'll have that for InfoWars Nightly News tomorrow night. Shutting down 290, I-35, much of downtown. Most of the businesses are shutting down for the day. And the Secret Service just says, don't come downtown, slaves, because the puppet of the New World Order is coming to town. And again, much of the businesses have shut down. There's a story on that in the Statesman. They're having all these security checkpoints and all this stuff to keep him safe, to create the illusion that he actually controls things, that he's actually, you know, running things so the banksters don't actually get identified. That's just some of what they're going to shut down downtown and the major highways. It's just pathetic what we've been conditioned to accept, the TSA sticking their hands down our pants. This is an illegitimate federal government. It's been captured by foreign banks, that spies on us illegally, that tortures and kills people illegally, NDAA, that engages in all these insider deals, giving trillions to their buddies. It must come to an end. And more government is not the answer. It's that simple. And they have domesticated all these people to use them as an army to suck out the rest of the substance of this country. And then the globalists will just move on to the next host nation. That is their program. That is their plan. Be aware of it and fight it. I'm Alex Jones signing off for InfoWars.com. Find out more about books that expose it at InfoWarsShop.com. None Dare Call a Conspiracy and others.
Actually, that whole thing may be a little harsh on Obama. I know he's really trying to do things to turn the country around. In fact, while we were playing that video, I got a call from Alex. He's put up a new video. He's really had a change of heart. Let's hear what he has to say now.
Ladies and gentlemen, I want to repent here on air, and I want to apologize to Mr. President, Mr. Obama. The buck really stops with him, and he really cares about us. That's why Goldman Sachs and J.P. Morgan and all these foreign banks financed him and Bush and Romney, because they're good people. And I want to apologize that earlier today I put out this video, Obama says the state is God, because I was critical there. But I had a conversion, and I want to apologize right now for this video. And I just want to say that I shouldn't have talked about this dear, sweet man that the international bankers put in charge of us. They did it because they care. And yes, he says repeatedly, quote, if you've got a business, you didn't build that. Somebody else made that happen. You're absolutely right. None of us did anything but government. Thank you so much. In fact, right now, I just want to say I'm sorry to you and all the other bureaucrats that and people that work so hard and are so good and are so creative and have always been so nice to me. Thank you for life itself. Thank you for creating the planet. Thank you for letting my parents conceive me and my great-great-grandparents, great-great-great-great-grandparents who had great-great-grandparents. Thank you.
You've just helped me all along. I love how here in Austin, big mega corporations like Apple and Formula One get total tax exemption and taxpayer money pays for them to move here. But then I went and asked about a tax exemption. I've got now about 45 crew members, and I was told to go to hell and laughed at by people that I used to see as arrogant. Now I realize they just are smarter than me and understand I'm filth. Thank you for letting me know I'm filth. Thank you for taking my tax money to move General Motors to China. I know you knew best. Thank you for the great job you've done. We were number one in test scores back when we didn't have government schools 67 years ago. Now we're the lowest in the industrial world, behind more than 30 third world countries. Thank you. Thank you that when you go out in public, they look like they've been hit by a retardation ray. Thank you. You're really doing a great job. Of course, dumbing us down on purpose because you're our rulers. I mean, excuse me. That's the old Alex. I'm sorry. Thank you for creating milk and honey in the streets, sir. I mean, like you said, everybody who has a business knows they've got to give back. Paying on average over 50% taxes isn't enough, and giving people jobs and, putting up with, all the stuff. I mean, that, you know, working 18 hours a day, it's because of you, sir. Reading off a teleprompter, vacationing over 100 days a year, you deserve it.
We created a lot of millionaires. And, you know, there are a lot of wealthy, successful Americans who agree with me because they want to give something back. They know they didn't.
Oh, we created a lot of millionaires. I guess you kind of did by devaluing the currency the last 10 years. They didn't want it used to be, I guess, to be a millionaire, I've read. But, I mean, here you have it. And he goes on, let's face it. I mean, we didn't build the business. Here it is.
If you've been successful, you didn't get there on your own.
No. And he just goes on. So, yeah, if you got a beautiful voice, you're a great painter, or you're a great dancer, or you're a woman who goes out and, you know, sells her body, or a woman who goes out and paints paintings, or a man who goes out, I mean, whatever it is. You're an NFL player who goes out and sells his talents and sells his body to get broken up. You didn't do it on your own. You got that? Of course, the coaches and everybody else got paid, and they made money off of you, but that isn't enough. You need to pay the foreign banks that most of our taxes are paid to now on record. Even Ronald Reagan's own commission, the Grace Commission, found they go to foreign banks. More needs to go to them who are tax-exempt, because he cares about poor people, even though he's financed by the bankers who are tax-exempt. Thank you, sir, for the NDAA and the drones and the checkpoints and giving the illegal aliens health care when you wouldn't get jack crap in Mexico if you went down there as a U.S. citizen. Thank you, thank you, thank you.
You didn't get there on your own. I'm always...
Sure. I guess our parents, I guess all the taxes we paid already, none of it's enough, is it? Notice we have bigger government we've ever had in this country, and the prosperity's going out the window. And all the big government types that run cities like Chicago and New York, everybody wants to get the hell out of them. So the OECD and the UN and the IMF World Bank say they want a global government, so there's nowhere to run. And I agree, nowhere to run, 100% taxes. It's great when the Soviet Union takes over and kills tens of millions, starving them to death and working them to death in work brigades. When China did it and killed over 60 million in just a 10-year period, 64 million. Mao Zedong, wonderful guy. I mean, I was wrong all these years. The state is God. You are God, Obama. The derivatives we've been signed on to, the now 40-plus trillion banker bailouts to the mega banks as direct taxes to them. All the police and bureaucrats and being talked down to like I'm filth. Thank you. I needed to know that. You're right. We need more government. UN diplomatic communities, they can run drugs and run child sex slaves and everything else. I guess I was a bad person for not liking that in the past and knowing the UN's running giant murder operations worldwide while models run around on TV telling us to give money to UNICEF so they can kill kids. I was wrong to be against all that. All the art, all the literature, all the culture, because he goes on to say that, kind of came out of the government. So thank you. Thanks for all the monopolies and giving insider deals to your friends. Thank you. Thank you. You know, that's why all governments get these control freak classes in power and things get out of control. And whether it's the Druids or whether it was the Aztecs or the other Mayan cultures or the Babylonians, every culture, including the Romans and the Greeks, had human sacrifice because government starts demanding your firstborn kids be chopped up and they would kick the meat down the steps at Chichen Itza and other areas in Mexico and then people would come up and pay. The priests made their money, that was their tax, off the succulent child's meat. And again, I shouldn't be against that. Government produces so much. Every government in history finally gets crazy control freaks in charge who start demanding we sacrifice ourselves on bloody altars or in big wars. And again, I apologize. I was wrong all along. You're right. Thanks for all the dependency on the general public that can hardly talk now in the giant sprawling inner cities crumbling and rotting and everything falling apart. People run to the few states that aren't like that, like Texas and other areas, but the bureaucrats all run here like a horde of magic-loving locusts to eat our flesh down to our bones politically, sending off swarms of bureaucrats to eat out our substance. Oh, but that's the Declaration of Independence. Thank you, Obama, for teaching me that America was really bad. Thank you for teaching me that it was scum. But calling total communist world government run by offshore fascists who are exempt. Oh, yeah, fascism's above the communism and then is exempt from it. Carol Quigley wrote that at Georgetown, but all you political idiots who were taught in public schools comment on this YouTube video or at InfoWars Nightly News and say that I don't understand that communism or fascism are two different things. No, they're not, you idiots. Anyways, you're just taught that in the false paradigm. Oh, I'm sorry. I apologize. Fascism and communism are good now. I agree with Obama. Again, secret arrests, all of it being lied to, warrantless wiretapping, everything diametrically opposed to what this country was founded on. Oh, it's so American to have FEMA demonizing the founding fathers. So, thanks for all that is good. Thank you for being God. Thank you for teaching me that the state is God. I apologize to you. I worship you, Barack Obama. Like they said during the election in 08, they said you might be Jesus in the news. And I guess you are. And they said they would arrest people, they criticize you. So I just worship you and thank you for the breath in my lungs. Thank you for the grass growing. Thank you for the birds tweeting. Thank you for the sun. Thank you for the ocean. Thank you for all the beautiful government buildings and the great service and just all of it. And thank you for what you do to humanity, taking any future destiny away and taking any rugged individualism away. Thank you for what you've turned America into and the rest of the world. We can just look at it and thank you for how beautiful it is. So thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you. And I apologize to all of you. You're right. You're right. This is a beautiful system you've created. And that is all I have to say. Thank you so much for everything you do. And I just think all governments are God, like the churches teach, Romans 13. We should worship, do whatever government says. The founders were wrong to stand up against it. Do what government says. Take all the Prozac, take all the vaccines, the modern forms of sacrifice. Ignore all the facts that they're putting cancer viruses in it because the governing class likes to kill people, and that's their enjoyment, and they're in charge, so they obviously know best. And again, I apologize and worship you, Barack Obama. Oh, thank you so much for all you did. Alex Jones signing off for InfoWars.com, an evil website that doesn't worship government and tyrants and thugs and checkpoints, and I believe in freedom and family and the Second Amendment, and I'm evil, and I apologize, it's so horrible. I apologize. Back to InfoWars Nightly News.
Now, Sheriff Joe Arpaio has, of course, been closely following what Obama has to say as well, and he agrees with the whole idea that the state's always there to help you. I mean, obviously, if you have a birth certificate from Hawaii, that means someone helped you get it. Of course, that's all sarcastic. So is Alex's video. But actually, Arpaio has revealed that he thinks it's a national security threat, the issues surrounding Obama's birth certificate, and basically punting the ball because he doesn't know who to turn to, because the people who are supposed to be accountable to these kinds of major questions of legitimacy of presidents, over whether or not the government can continue, over whether or not you can get forged documents, well, those people all answer directly to Obama, Eric Holder, and the rest of them. So who does Arpaio even turn to with the fact that he thinks the birth certificate was fraudulent, forged, there's all these different things with the document, but then he finds that even foreigners are able to get birth certificates in Hawaii, according to his investigation. We'll have detailed coverage of that, I'm sure, coming up later in the week once we've had time to analyze the video. But we've seen the Rush reports on WorldNet Daily and other websites about Arpaio's investigation. You know the mainstream media won't be covering that. Meanwhile, the Pentagon has released a Comics for Global Domination. It's part of this larger propaganda effort, and never mind the actual money spent, there's a great deal of mental capital that goes into convincing young people to join the military, that it's a cool adventure, that we're doing good around the world, kicking ass and taking names in the hope of preserving so-called democracy around the world. Really a big lie, but here's some of that propaganda, obviously aimed at children. So you're seeing right now here part of America's Army Comics. It's going to be a free iPad and Android tablet from the same people who make America's Army PC games, always trying to indoctrinate people basically into killing at will because it's always for freedom. Now, there's also countless Hollywood movies where they glorify the military, and then in return, they let the Hollywood firms use major tank equipments and F-16 jets and bases and everything else. That's if you're making Top Gun to make them look good. But if you criticize what they're actually doing, you don't get jack squat, and probably your movie doesn't even get made. Or if it does, your budget is cut. Meanwhile, Bill Gates has funded an experiment to spray atmosphere with sulfur particles now in New Mexico. He's been funding this for years, and they've been talking about what they might do, different proposals. Sulfur is only one of the proposals. There's also aluminum dioxide, barium salts, you name it. But this is an experiment that will take place in about a year at Fort Sumner, New Mexico, where they're going to send a balloon 80,000 feet up in the air to spray these particles, supposedly all to fight global warming. However, even some of the most staunch environmentalists who back the pro-global warming push say this is dangerous and can have catastrophic effects on the Earth. Well, of course. But they're saying specifically, if this was triggered in the wrong way, it could cause drought and famine while trying to cool the planet, really just reversing everything that they claim global warming would do and doing it on purpose through their geoengineering experiments. Call it chemtrailing, call it what you will. We've done a lot of research on this. It's been ongoing for a while. And again, you see Bill Gates not only backing Monsanto, not only backing all kinds of dangerous genetically modified food and organism projects, but now spraying the skies, salting the earth. And as you might have guessed, there's GMO crops from Monsanto and other firms specifically meant to deal with too much aluminum in the soil, with too much of these other salts in the soil. I don't know if they have a sulfur variety, but we're going to have a lookout for that. And again, involved in the project is David Keith, one of the main geoengineering scientists who's always said these proposals are good ideas. He and others have presented before the Council on Foreign Relations and other bodies to promote it and make sure it's not too heavily regulated. That was part of the UK-US study from a couple years ago. Meanwhile, other environmentalists are saying that nuclear meltdown is good for the environment. I wrote an article on this on Sunday after I randomly heard an NPR segment where they said, visit sunny Chernobyl, and how it's a love letter to pollution. This author, Andrew Blackwell, has said, really, in this poetic language, paradoxically, perversely, the accident may have actually been good for this environment. Because it's a quarantine radioactive zone, everyone has left a long time ago, and very few people spend any time here. He tells All Things Considered host Guy Raz on NPR. You've got to go in spring, obviously, and it's just full of trees and birds and insects. It's become a huge accidental wilderness preserve. In a way, nature has taken over. The birds and bees and animals and wolves are not aware, don't care about the radioactive contamination we do, Blackwell says. There's nothing like it. It's an absolutely unique place, and most of it is flat out beautiful. Now tell me that's not propaganda for Agenda 21, where they envision a planet rewilded by the general animals and bees and plants and birds, but devoid of humans, celebrating these areas where humans can't go anymore, even if it's for the ironic reason that man caused this great disaster, clearing out, in this example, the Chernobyl wasteland, which I think also killed more than a million people, scientists have estimated. But it's beautiful now because there's no people there and wildlife has taken it back over. So it's almost as if these nuclear disasters are good for the planet. And in fact, it dovetails with other propaganda that's been going on. And no, I don't just mean Ann Coulter saying that radiation's, quote, good for you, although that's totally insane as well. Suzanne Posel, who frequently contributes to InfoWars, writes the article, do nuclear disasters play into the global elite's Agenda 21 rewilding scheme? And she goes on to cite someone totally different than the author I just cited, one Robert Baker, director of the Natural Sciences Research Laboratory, who says the 20-mile exclusion zone at Chernobyl is off limits to humans. However, all species of plants, insects, and animals have repopulated the areas and made a new home where no humans are allowed. Even some species that were supposed to be extinct have reestablished themselves without signs of mutation from the radioactivity. In fact, none of the animals at Chernobyl show signs of radioactive mutation. The world's biggest ecological disaster has been declared a growing natural habitat where deer grazed in lush pastures, wolves openly stalked their prey, and life was thriving despite the Geiger counter readings showing the dangerous levels of radioactivity present. Baker remarked, the countryside is beautiful. So there's that talking point again, that the atomic cleared zones, the radioactive fallout zones, while humans can't go there, are beautiful for the planet, beautiful for life. Really just bizarre stuff, as more than half of the U.S. nuclear plants are admittedly crumbling. Literally 75% or more are leaking, including the radioactive element tritium. It's affecting water supplies. General economic impact, environmental impact is all there. You got the Fukushima disaster still, you have the Fukushima disaster still weighing in and causing problems. And yet they say, isn't it beautiful at Chernobyl? Really strange. Monsanto, on the other hand, Protection Act may help grant total immunity to the biotech industry and ensure that the GM crops are always approved. We're talking about quiet riders, little tiny clauses added on to these major bills for both the 2012 Farm Bill as well as the 2013 Agriculture Appropriations Bill. And it's been put in there, of course, by Monsanto and other biotech lobbyists, of which there are many. The whole FDA, as you know, is basically run by Monsanto. And inside these riders, inside these giant bills, are requirements that the USDA give temporary approval even when GM crops have been question and put into the safety box for greater evaluation, which of course is only necessary for the protection of humans. If you don't know, if you haven't been tuning into this program and so many others, GMO is dangerous. It's been connected to organ failure, sterility, infertility, sneaker, passed down, hidden, ghost, third generation infertility, heart attacks, organ failure. Well, I already said that one, but lots of problems. In fact, at the end of this news segment, we're going to play Jeffrey Smith in this long primer in an interview we did with him a couple years ago where he explains the whole deal with GMOs, why you should look out for them, how to avoid them when you're shopping, and so on and so forth. So please stay tuned for that. But meanwhile, you've got these appropriations and little clauses in here which really ensure that these products are going to hit the market without any serious safety testing. And they've already had the Bush and Quayle administrations really fast-track the whole GMO process, make sure the Obama administration would not get in the way, or the Clintons, or George W. Bush, or the rest of them. Really, we're witnessing a takeover by biotech. They say they're going to have 50 times the natural species within about 50 years from the synthetic biology market. Really scary stuff happening. But in the here and now, we have to also be worried about World War III. We have Iran just announcing that its plans to close the Strait of Hormuz have been finalized. You remember at the end of last year and earlier in this year, they were warning that they could block the Strait of Hormuz and that they would if attacked by the West. Now they're saying that plan is finalized. Don't attack us over the nuclear issue or anything else, or else we're going to block the Strait of Hormuz, which would definitely send things into a World War III zone. It would further drive up the oil prices. The West might think we are just bluffing with the blockading of the Strait of Hormuz, but we already have some good plans on how to do that, said Firuz Zabadi, who was quoted by Fars News Agency. However, of course, doing this blocking the Strait of Hormuz plan is dependent upon approval from the Supreme Leader Khamenei. Not that he's good. None of these people are good in these foreign countries, but we don't need to start World War III, yet they are purposely provocateuring it. There's no greater evidence of that than the latest false massacre that's been claimed over Syria. Kurt Nemo has the article, Prelude to Destruction in Syria, Another Fake Massacre. That's the massacre at Tremce, Syria. It was reported with standard sensational fanfare over the weekend by establishment media, yet it is just another war propaganda fabrication. Like the babies in incubators, like everything, like every war of the 20th century that the West was involved in. It's been billed as Syria's bloodiest massacre by Newsweek, Bloomberg, you name it, Hillary Clinton, all these people. But in reality, it turns out all the people supposedly massacred were really just rebel forces. They were 90% plus all male. They were all of fighting age except a couple people. They haven't been able to produce any real victims' names that would be part of a, quote, massacre. I believe there was one six-year-old child who was killed. Well, you want to guess how many civilians will be killed if you bastards go to war in Syria, if you start a World War III? How many civilians were killed in Iraq? It's been estimated conservatively at more than 1 million people during the formal war and another million during the decade of sanctions under Clinton and the others. But they want to holler and scream about 130 excuse me, not even 130, 103 victims that were actually just Al-Qaeda rebel fighters funded, propped up by the West to take over Assad. That's what's really going on, but they want to claim it's a massacre. And even the New York Times admits that it was a battle, not a massacre. Details of a battle challenge reports of a Syrian massacre. That's in the New York Times. It's right here. And it goes on to explain how the whole deal with the city of Hama and the deal with Tremsa was all just really an uneven clash between the heavily armed Syrian military and the local fighters bearing light weapons that they got from the West. And then you got the Syrian National Council and the other CIA factions prepared to take over Syria once they topple Assad or once they get a big civil war going or any of the other contingency plans they have in the works. But that is why Tony Cartellucci, among others, has written that Hillary Clinton must resign because she's been propping up this latest event in Tremsa as a massacre when it was really a battle from a faction they've covertly propped up. Let's just get honest about what's going on here. Her irresponsible warmongering challenges America's credibility, he argues. And obviously that's true, but of course Hillary's just taking orders from those who steer the real master plan. She's just a hatchet man. She's an executioner. She doesn't make decisions, although she happily would make basically the same decisions because she loves to see people, well, let's just say some celebrate the war and bloodshed that goes on around the world. I, for one, don't. I hope we could somehow avoid this. Meanwhile, there's another bombshell with Syria. A defected Syrian ambassador admits to his role in killing U.S. troops. He claims he was killing on behalf of Al-Qaeda and on behalf of Assad in Iraq. Well, while it may be true that Al-Qaeda was killing U.S. soldiers in Iraq, there's very little evidence to believe it was being directed from Assad. Instead, Tony Cartellucci outlines how the West has been propping up Al-Qaeda for all these years and how all that killing was basically done under the Hegelian dialectic to stir things up and ensure a big body count, and how this hero of the West for defecting is really part of the problem, and they're just propping up Assad's so-called casualty claims and his wrongdoings while always avoiding what the West has done. I hope they don't go to war. We turn now to the Daily Quote. Stay tuned. After the break, we have the big Jeffrey Smith interview. You want to tune in. You want to share it with friends and family, especially those who really haven't gotten around to studying the effects of genetically modified organisms. This is a great primer, a great introductory lesson. We turn now to that quote. By the end of this decade, we will live under the first one-world government that has ever existed in the Society of Nations, a government with absolute authority to decide the basic issues of survival. One-world government is inevitable. That's for Pope John Paul II, and it's definitely true. You see it with the environmental issues. You see it with the demonization of guns. They want a collectivist society, not an individual society. So being an individual in the future is basically going to be outlawed and demonized. You always have to do things for that greater good. Anyway, thanks for watching, people. Please subscribe to PrisonPlanet.tv. You help fund this program. You help us get the word out. And please also check out Planet InfoWars, where you can turn the website, that's a social network website, into your weapon against the New World Order. You can make it your info war to fight your way, hone in on the issues you think are most important, and help organize people either in your local area or across the globe who are interested in it, network on the issue, and begin to take action. That's all for my part for tonight. Thanks for watching, and stay tuned.
Have you been to InfoWarsShop.com lately? Express your inner patriot with these brand new InfoWars t-shirts. Say it loud with the InfoWars bullhorn shirt. Or educate the sheeple with the Bill of Rights shirt. Grope the public's mind with the TSA shirt. And with this shirt, you can let the dark side know of the Rebel Alliance's power. All available at InfoWarsShop.com.
sick of the globalist eugenicist control freaks adding poison to your water and laughing as you get sick and die? Start purifying your water with ProPure. My friends, I've done a lot of research, and the best gravity filter out there, bar none, is ProPure, and it's available discounted at InfoWars.com. Its filters are silver impregnated to prevent bacterial growth. There's no priming required. It's NSF 42 certified. Optional fluoride filters can reduce fluoride up to 95%. Easy to set up and use. Doesn't require electricity. Purify water from lakes, streams, ponds, and wells. This filter system leaves in beneficial minerals, which is key. Save money by not buying bottled water and avoid BPA that leaches from the plastic. ProPure is the best gravity-fed filter out there. It's what my family uses. InfoWars.com already has the lowest price on ProPure. But if you add the promo code WATER at checkout, you get an additional 10% off at InfoWars.com. You can also call to order 888-253-3139.
We are back at the InfoWars Nightly News. As we mentioned before the break, we're going to play now a full hour-long exclusive InfoWars interview with Jeffrey M. Smith. He's the leading expert on genetically modified organisms. He's not only studied all the scientific studies on them, he's interviewed industry experts, he's interviewed those scientists who conducted the research, he's found out all the inside tracks of how some of the scientists talk about population control, how others are not able to continue the research because of threats, because of destroyed equipment, because of loss of funding, while all the industry studies just automatically and superficially say GMOs are safe to eat when we know damn sure well they're not. The whole future of humanity is at stake if we don't stop these things from taking over the market, which Monsanto and the other major players are working very hard, as we mentioned about this bill, to ensure that they're allowed to go through even before safety testing. They are trying to take over everything. And it's not just the physical effects. It's not just the organ damage. It's not just the effect of gut flora. It's not just the sterility and infertility that's all been linked to GMO. It's taking over government itself, putting in their vice presidents, their law, lobbyists as the key FDA approval mechanisms, buying out the USDA and the other regulatory agencies, making sure that they don't do their real job to simply let Americans and others around the world know what's on their plate. This is a disturbing trend. It's not going to go away until we look closely at the issue. So with all that in mind, that's why we're going to show you this exclusive Jeffrey M. Smith video. But I also want to let you know we carry a number of his products at InfoWars.com. It's not to make money. It's to educate people on how important GMO issue is. The latest is Scientists Under Attack, Genetic Engineering in the Magnetic Field of Money. That was a Bertram Verhaeghe video produced in France and Germany, but with cooperation from Jeffrey Smith. He helped us get it here at the InfoWars store. He's also put out the GMO trilogy, an excellent highlight on the basic primer of the whole deal. He also interviews the experts in India, where they've been fighting the farmer suicides and trying to keep GMO out. His book, Seeds of Deception, an excellent book, and his other book, Genetic Roulette, all by Jeffrey M. Smith. We also carry The World According to Monsanto, which he's had some cooperation of, and all of them really expose this industry for what it is, highlight the dangers, and help educate people, as well as telling them where to shop to avoid genetically modified foods and some literature on which foods are most important to make sure you buy organics on. With no further ado, we turn now towards that interview, and we really respect all the warnings Jeffrey M. Smith has tried to bring to our program and to the alternative news world in general.
Of the hundreds of researchers that I've interviewed, scientists, you name it, no one has showed a greater overall knowledge and the skill to articulate it in an easily understandable way than Jeffrey M. Smith. His detailed study of GMOs, Monsanto, suppressing science and research is just amazing. Well, here's the exclusive, never-before-seen-and-heard interview with Jeffrey M. Smith.
My name is Jeffrey Smith, and I'm the executive director and founder of the Institute for Responsible Technology. Our campaign for healthier eating in America is designed to create a tipping point of consumer rejection against genetically modified foods in order to force them out of the market. Genetically modified foods are foods where the gene from one species, say viruses or bacteria, are forced into the DNA of plants such as soy, corn, cotton, canola, sugar beets. Those are the five major GM crops. And the derivatives of those crops, unfortunately, are in the vast majority of processed foods. So when you look and see soy lecithin or soy protein or high fructose corn syrup, even sugar, unless it says cane sugar, will have genetically engineered sugar beet derivatives. The reason why genetically modified foods got on the market in the first place was because an FDA policy claimed that the agency wasn't aware of any information showing that the foods were significantly different. On that basis, they said absolutely no safety testing was necessary. If the biotech companies like Monsanto and Dow and DuPont tell us that the foods are safe, then the FDA has no further questions. The concept that the agency was not aware of differences between GM and non-GM foods was pure fiction. Documents made public from a lawsuit 7 years after the policy was created prove that the agency was very well aware that there was differences. In fact, the overwhelming consensus among the FDA's own scientists were that genetically modified foods could create allergies, toxins, new diseases, and nutritional problems. They had urged their superiors to require long-term studies. But you see, the first Bush administration had ordered the FDA to promote the biotechnology industry. And so the FDA recruited for a position they created for him, they recruited Michael Taylor, Monsanto's former attorney, who later became Monsanto's vice president. While he was in charge, the policy was created that overruled and ignored the science and the scientists. Now, Michael Taylor, who I believe may be responsible for more food-related illnesses and deaths than anyone in human history, for fast-tracking GMOs onto our food supply, he is now the U.S. food safety czar under the Obama administration. While Obama was campaigning in Iowa, where I'm from, he promised us that he would require mandatory labeling of genetically engineered foods. We've been asking for this for years. In fact, 9 out of 10 Americans want genetically modified foods to be labeled. But because the FDA is ordered to promote the biotechnology industry, they ignore the desire of 9 out of 10 Americans in order to protect the economic interests of 5 GMO companies. We had hopes that Obama would fulfill his campaign pledge, but so far, no luck. Instead, Obama has recruited and put into positions of authority, both in the USDA and the FDA, people with very close ties to Monsanto and the biotechnology industry. So he's been a very big disappointment from the side of those of us looking for a reasonable, rational, and safe policy regarding GMOs. In 2009, the American Academy of Environmental Medicine urged all doctors to prescribe non-GMO diets to everyone. They said animal feeding studies have linked GMOs causally with things like reproductive problems, immune system problems, accelerated aging, dysfunctional regulation of insulin and cholesterol, and organ damage and gastrointestinal problems. They asked for doctors around the country to prescribe non-GMO diets and to give out educational materials to help people understand the risks and the alternatives. There are 2 main reasons why people genetically modify foods. They either drink poison or produce poison. The poison drinkers are called herbicide tolerant. Most popular variety is Roundup Ready. Let me explain. Monsanto's scientists found bacteria growing in a chemical waste dump near their factory, surviving in the presence of their herbicide called Roundup. So they had the brilliant idea, let's put it in the food supply. So they took the gene from the bacterium that allowed it to survive applications of Roundup and put it into soybean, corn, cotton, canola, etc. So now you can spray the field with Roundup and it kills all of the other plant biodiversity in the field, but not the Roundup Ready soy and Roundup Ready corn. The other variety of genetically modified crops produces a poison. They take a gene from a soil bacterium that produces a natural insecticide and put it into the DNA of the plant. So every single cell of every single plant in millions of acres has its own little spray bottle that can kill an insect by destroying its digestive system. Because of the herbicide-tolerant crops, particularly the Roundup Ready crops, there's so much more Roundup being used in the United States. We're just drenching our fields with it. In fact, in the first 13 years since GMOs were introduced, it's estimated that 383 million pounds of more of herbicide were sprayed in the United States because of the GMOs. The pesticide-producing crops are called BT for the soil bacterium Bacillus thuringiensis. Now, there is about a 68 million pound decrease of the use of insecticides on these fields over the first 13 years, but the actual amount of insecticide that's produced within every plant, when you add that all up, it's actually more than the insecticide that it displaces. So the overall impact is greater insecticide use as well. What these changes mean is that the plant might produce more allergens, more toxins, more anti-nutrients, more carcinogens, or even less of these. We don't know. It's a genetic roulette. In fact, the process of approval of these GM crops do not evaluate these type of changes. In Monsanto's own studies, which they conveniently left out of their published paper, which we recovered later, they found that in cooked GM soy, there was as much as 7 times more of a known allergen called trypsin inhibitor, and about a doubling of an anti-nutrient called soy lectin, which blocks the absorption of certain nutrients. In genetically modified corn, a gene which is normally switched off was switched on to produce an allergen, and other proteins were truncated or changed in shape, which can change a harmless protein into a potentially deadly one. In fact, when they looked at that corn variety, they found 43 different proteins that had significantly changed their levels of expression because of the genetic insertion. So these could be caught wreaking havoc with our health or the environment, but no one has evaluated them. One of the most consistent features of the animal feeding studies is immune responses. Immune responses are the body's reaction to something that it considers foreign and may be harmful. By definition, genetically modified crops have something foreign, which may be harmful. Now, the immune system problem has been seen consistently in rats, in mice, in any time they test for GMOs. What we're seeing in the human population since GMOs were introduced is an increase in autoimmune disease, inflammation, and allergies. And these are the kinds of things that we would predict if the animal feeding studies were to carry out into human experience. I want to explain two different categories of things that can go wrong. One is for the BT crops. The biotech industry feels confident in putting an insecticide, a toxin called BT, into our corn and cotton plants. And their excuse is that we have a history of safe use using BT in agriculture. It's a soil bacterium. When it's gathered up, the spores and the bacterium, it can be sprayed on plants to kill insects. Then it biodegrades or washes off. But what the biotech engineers do is they take the gene that produces that toxin out of the bacterium and put it into the crop. But the crop produces the bacterium at thousands of times the concentration of the natural spray form. It doesn't wash off. It doesn't biodegrade. In fact, it's designed molecularly to be more toxic than the natural form. It even has properties of a known allergen. The natural form by itself, however, is not that safe. In fact, peer-reviewed published studies show that when the natural BT toxin is fed to mice, it causes tissue damage and an immune response as powerful as if they've been fed cholera toxin. According to peer-reviewed published studies, when BT toxin was sprayed by plane for gypsy moth infestation in the Pacific Northwest, about 500 people complained of allergic or flu-like symptoms. Some had to go to the hospital. Now, thousands of farm workers in India who are picking the cotton engineered to produce that same BT in higher concentrations are complaining of the same allergic and flu-like symptoms, and some have to go to the hospital. When they allow animals to graze on the cotton plants after harvest, thousands of sheep, buffalo, and goats have died. I visited one village where they had allowed their buffalo to graze without harm for years on natural cotton plants after harvest. They allowed 13 buffalo to graze on BT cotton plants for one day, January 3rd, 2008. Within 3 days, all 13 buffalo were dead. They also lost 26 goats and sheep. I asked the villagers, how many of you personally have had itching from working in the BT cotton fields? Most of them raised their hands. In the state of Haryana, India, they feed cottonseed cake to buffalo. Most buffalo actually refuse to eat the cottonseed cake, but those that eat it, most have reproductive problems, including sterility, premature deliveries, abortions, and many of the calves died and adults died. We've also seen about 24 farmers in the Midwest claim that their cows or pigs became sterile from certain varieties of BT corn. A farmer in Germany says that 12 of his cows died when fed exclusively a variety of BT corn. And in the Philippines, when people were living next to a particular BT corn variety, during the time of pollination, the people in the village experienced skin, respiratory, and intestinal reactions and fever. When the same seeds were planted in 4 more villages, the same symptoms returned. They also reported deaths among water buffaloes, chickens, and horses, and unexplained human deaths. When the Italian government conducted a study and fed Monsanto's BT corn to mice, the mice had massive immune responses. When the Austrian government fed corn that was both BT and Roundup ready, the animals had less babies and smaller babies. Now, these are the problems that may be resulting from the BT toxin itself, or they may be resulting from the massive collateral damage that results from the process of insertion. We don't know because no one is looking. In the case of Roundup Ready soy, we see a lot of serious problems. Soon after the GM soy was introduced to the UK, soy allergies skyrocketed by 50%. We know that there are many reasons why GM soy might be associated with higher levels of allergies. In fact, a skin prick test shows that some people can react to the GM soy, but not to a wild variety of soy. And they also found a new protein that had allergenic properties that was in the GM soy, but not the wild variety. When they fed GM soy to mice, there was a reduction in digestive enzymes by as much as 77%. When you impair digestion, it might increase the ability for allergens. This was of grave concern to the FDA scientists, who said it would be a serious health hazard to introduce an antibiotic-resistant marker gene. They were concerned that the gene might transfer to pathogenic bacteria and create super diseases. Knowing that soy genes transfer, we know that the antibiotic-resistant genes might also transfer to create super diseases. When they fed genetically modified soy to female rats before they got pregnant, more than half of their babies died within 3 weeks. The babies were also much smaller on average, and in a subsequent study, could not reproduce. When they fed genetically modified soy to male rats, the testicles actually changed from the normal pink to blue. When they fed genetically modified soy to male mice, their testicles also changed and damaged the young sperm cells. And when they looked at the offspring at the embryo stage of parent mice that were fed genetically modified soy, their DNA functioned differently compared to when parent mice ate non-GM soy. When they fed hamsters genetically modified soy for 2 years over three generations, by the third generation, most of the parent hamsters that were eating genetically modified soy lost the ability to have babies. The GM soy group also developed more slowly and matured sexually more slowly as well. It turns out the Roundup, which is being sprayed on millions of acres, primarily because of the Roundup-ready crops, has a tremendous impact on health. Now, it's designed, actually, to damage the health of plants. That's how it's an herbicide. When you spray a plant with Roundup, what it does is it goes into the plant and accumulates into the parts of the plant that we eat. It also gets pushed out the roots into the soil, where it destroys beneficial microorganisms and enhances the harmful microorganisms, like Fusarium, which can produce mycotoxins, which themselves can be harmful to humans and mammals. Now, glyphosate, which is the main ingredient or the active ingredient in Roundup, was actually originally patented as a chelator, meaning that it binds with or kidnaps and holds hostage certain mineral nutrients like copper and zinc and manganese and magnesium and iron. And so when you spray the glyphosate on the crop, it bounds up the nutrients in the soil, making them less available for the plant. So that's another way that it helps kill plants. But when we eat the glyphosate, either in the plant or because of the contaminated groundwater, we also end up chelating some of the nutrients in our bodies, making it less available for our health and protection. And there's a lot of diseases that are associated with mineral deficiencies. Now, the Roundup itself is also toxic to humans and mammals. In fact, it interferes with endocrine development. It can cause, in certain rat studies, lower sperm counts, abnormal or dead sperm, lower testosterone level. So when we see the genetically modified Roundup Ready soy being fed to animals and causing reproductive problems, we don't know if it's the GMO component or the high residues of Roundup. In addition, the glyphosate in Roundup doesn't just dissipate. In fact, 2 quarts, one in the United States and one in France, told Monsanto they had to stop saying that their Roundup was biodegradable. It actually accumulates in the soil and can last up to 3 years or longer. So The more we spray with Roundup, it has an accumulating effect so that anything that's planted in that same field after Roundup can also uptake the Roundup. And it can be reactivated when you put in fertilizers. They've even found glyphosate in the manure of chickens. So now if you spread chicken manure on a field to create increased nutrients, the glyphosate might tie up the nutrients, making it harder to nourish the plants. And we are flooding our country with this glyphosate. In fact, the weeds are developing resistance, so people are pouring on more glyphosate and more glyphosate, which is the active ingredient Roundup. One of the interesting aspects of genetic engineering is anytime a scientist discovers a problem, they're attacked. It doesn't matter how much credibility they have, what level of publication they put it in, they're attacked. Sometimes they lose their funding. Sometimes they're fired or lose tenure. I'll give you an example. The UK government wanted to prove to a skeptical public that GMOs were safe. So they put out a grant proposal trying to find someone who can design testing to show that GMOs were safe. 28 different scientists applied. They gave it to Dr. Arpad Pusztai, the world's leading researcher in his field. He worked at one of the top nutritional research institutes in the country, or in the world, and was leading about 20 or 30 people on this grant. He fed genetically modified potatoes to rats as part of the protocol. The potatoes were engineered to produce an insecticide. Now, he knew this insecticide was harmless to rats. He had fed huge amounts of the insecticide to rats in previous experiments. In fact, for this experiment, one group of rats was fed the GM potato that produced its insecticide. One group of rats were fed natural potatoes, and a third group, natural potatoes plus the insecticide spiked directly into the diet. Only those that ate the GM potatoes got sick. So what was the cause? It was not the insecticide. It was somehow the process of genetic engineering which caused the massive damage to the rats, including potentially precancerous cell growth in their digestive tract, smaller brains, livers, and testicles, partial atrophy of the liver, and damaged immune system after only 10 days. He went public with his concerns and was a hero for about 2 days at his prestigious institute. Then 2 phone calls were allegedly placed from the UK Prime Minister's office, forwarded through the receptionist to the director of the institute. The next day, Dr. Pusztai was fired from his job after 35 years and silenced with threats of a lawsuit. His team was disbanded. They never implemented his protocols, and his institute, plus the UK government, launched a campaign to destroy his reputation in order to protect the reputation of biotechnology. After 7 months, by an order of Parliament, his gag order was lifted, he got his data back, and it's now published. And it remains the most in-depth animal feeding study yet published on GMOs, implicating the process itself as causing harm. In Moscow, when the scientists discovered that Roundup-ready soy fed to female rats caused more than half of their babies to die within 3 weeks, she was told by her boss, who was being pressured by his boss, no more studies on GMOs. In fact, documents were burnt on her desk, samples were stolen. One of her colleagues tried to comfort her by saying, well, maybe the GM soy will solve the overpopulation problem. One of the criticisms that was leveled at the Russian scientists, which has merit, is that she never conducted a biochemical analysis of the feed. So maybe there was some toxin mixed with the GM soy that caused this astounding death rate. But after she had done the research 3 times with similar results, coincidentally, the rat chow, which was being fed to all of the rats in her Russian facility, switched to be based on GM soy. So she couldn't do any more studies because she had no controls. But after 2 months, she had the brilliant idea to ask her colleagues, what's the infant mortality rate in your mice studies? Let me say that again. But after 2 months, she had the brilliant idea to ask her colleagues after 2 months, what was the infant mortality in the rats that you're working with? It had skyrocketed to over 55%, suggesting that it wasn't a particular toxin in her batch, but it's a more generic aspect of genetically modified soy. When Dr. Carrasco in Argentina linked Roundup to birth defects, both in amphibians and possibly in humans, he was immediately attacked, and 4 people showed up at his place of business and tried to interrogate him in a very aggressive manner. Time and time again, when scientists discover adverse findings about GMOs, they're attacked viciously in the press, through their colleagues. It happens so often that many scientists just give up and they refuse to do any more research about GMOs. One of the myths of biotechnology is that GMOs are going to feed the world. Actually, they work against feeding a hungry world. If something is to feed the world, well, first of all, it has to increase yields, it has to be reliable, and yield increase actually has to be a way of solving the hunger problem. It also has to be healthy and better than competing technologies. GMOs fail on every count. First of all, the average GM crop reduces yield. It does not increase yield. Second, increased yield actually isn't the solution to hunger today. We have more food per person than any time in human history, but 1 billion people go to bed hungry or malnourished. It's a question of distribution and economic access. Also, GMOs are not reliable. Take the case of BT cotton in India. That Monsanto has convinced millions of farmers to plant BT cotton. And unfortunately, it doesn't always perform. In fact, the UK Daily Mail estimates that more than 125,000 farmers who planted BT cotton and were unable to even repay the high interest debts that they took out for the expensive seeds and associated chemicals committed suicide. Now, this is a catastrophe. Some people put the number closer to 200,000. So this is an example of what's happening in a developing country, and they're trying to convince us that GMOs are going to help the developing world. GMOs are also not better than competing technologies if you're trying to increase yields. In fact, studies on millions and millions of farmers show that sustainable techniques can increase yields by an average of 79%. Some studies show that organic agriculture can increase yields by 100%, even 300% in developing countries. If you look at the Rodale Institute, they did a side-by-side study with organic soy and corn versus non-organic. And they found that they actually have comparable yields, but the organic is better during times of adverse weather and also has less inputs. In January 1999 biotechnology conference in San Francisco, Arthur Anderson, a company that had consulted with Monsanto, they were also Enron's consultant, revealed how they had worked with their executives to create their plan. They asked Monsanto executives to describe their ideal future in 15 to 20 years. And the Monsanto executives described a world in which 100% of all the commercial seeds were genetically engineered and patented. And Anderson worked backwards from that goal to create the strategy and tactics to achieve it. At the same conference, another biotechnology company was projecting that within 5 years, by 2004, they would have a 95% replacement of all natural seeds. So the biotechnology industry is planning to replace nature. Fortunately, consumer concern has stopped that moving train. About 3 weeks after this conference, the gag order on Dr. Pusztai was lifted. Within 1 week, 159 column feet of articles were written in Europe. Within a month, 750 articles were written. One editor said it divided society into two warring blocks. Within 10 weeks, the tipping point of consumer rejection had been achieved. Within a single week, in the end of April 1999, virtually every major food company committed to stop using GM ingredients for their European brands, but not in the U.S., because it wasn't reported in the U.S. According to Project Censored, the Arpad Pusztai story was one of the 10 most underreported events of the year. In the United States, if you have asked the average American, have you ever eaten a genetically modified food in your life? 60% say no, 15% say I don't know. So 3/4 of Americans do not realize that they're eating GMOs in nearly every meal. The fact that GMOs flourish on the basis of consumer ignorance leaves the biotechnology industry extremely vulnerable. If some event or campaign were to increase the visibility of GMOs, especially the health dangers, we could see a tipping point in the United States like we've seen in Europe. In fact, bovine growth hormone, the genetically engineered drug that's injected into cows to increase milk supply, that's being ushered out because of consumer concern. You see, when you inject cows with bovine growth hormone, it changes the milk. There's more pus, more antibiotics used, more bovine growth hormone, and of greatest concern, more IGF-1, insulin-like growth factor 1, a very powerful hormone which is linked to cancer. Now, milk contains IGF-1 anyway, And milk drinkers have higher levels of IGF-1, and those with high levels of IGF-1 are more likely to have breast cancer, prostate cancer, colon and lung cancer. And it's in much higher levels in milk from cows treated with bovine growth hormone. I'll let you connect the dots. But as we explain this to consumers, their concern about drug milk has caused the manufacturers and dairies to kick it out. Walmart has kicked it out of its store brand, Starbucks out of its stores, Dannon and Yoplait, Kroger's, Publix. In fact, most of the major dairies in the United States have stopped using bovine growth hormone because of consumer concern. So our campaign for healthier eating in America is now designed to create a tipping point against all GMOs in the food supply. In fact, it's already happening. The fastest growing store brand claim in 2009 was GMO-free. And Supermarket News, a big trade journal for the food industry, predicted that 2010 would see an unprecedented upsurge of consumer awareness and concern about GMOs. And as I travel around the country, as I do every year, I see more informed and enthusiastic activists and consumers getting the word out about GMOs. So we now are equipping them with strategies and tools and speaker training. And we have a campaign to hit the tipping point of consumer rejection in the United States between 10-10-10, that's October 10th, 2010, and 11-11-11, within a year, a month, and a day. So I invite you to come to our website at healthiereating.org to get involved, to sign up for a Healthier Eating Pledge, to get the tools to invite others to do the same, so that together we can create a tipping point. You see, we only need about 5% of U.S. shoppers. We think that's more than enough to create the tipping point. And 15 million people, 5.6 million households, that's easy. Why is the number so low? Because GMOs give no consumer benefits. There's no reason why a company will say, well, I need to keep my GMOs because it has better mouthfeel or sweetness or shelf life. If a small percentage of people were to reject GMOs, it would become a pure marketing liability. The companies don't even have to switch recipes in order to get rid of GMOs. They can just use the non-GM corn and soy, as many companies have done already, like Whole Foods for its store brands, like many companies in the natural food industry. There's also a new third-party verified seal called Non-GMO Project Verified, which is being put on products that show that the non-GMO claim has been third-party verified. So the entire natural food industry is getting on board, mothers are getting on board, doctors and medical organizations are prescribing non-GMO diets, many spiritual and religious groups are saying that GMO really means God move over, and they're against it. We have enough people to eliminate GMOs, we just have to get the word out to those who are already receptive. If we need only 15 million Americans, consider that 28 million Americans already buy organic food on a regular basis, 87 million people are strongly against GMOs, and 159 million people, 53% of Americans, the majority, say they would avoid GMOs if they were labeled. So we have a non-GMO shopping guide to help people make healthier non-GMO choices. So go to non-GMOshoppingguide.com to see for yourself which products are non-GMO and how to avoid them. Right now, it is legal to call something non-GMO, but the Codex negotiation team in 2010, in May, went to a conference in Quebec armed with a new proposal that could ultimately make it very difficult for people to label something as non-GMO or even keep the requirements in Europe for GMO labeling. Fortunately, the U.S. didn't get much traction at that meeting and only got supported by about 3 countries out of 50 that participated, and we hope that that can go away very soon. When RBGH was approved, Michael Taylor, Monsanto's former attorney, who later became Monsanto's vice president, was in charge. So it got approved with very little testing and no labeling requirements. In fact, Taylor wrote a white paper suggesting that if any dairies want to label their products as free from RBGH, he suggested that they also include a disclaimer that says, according to the FDA, there's no clean milk from cows supplemented with RBGH and those not supplemented. Now, this was a recommendation. It wasn't a requirement. But as soon as companies started to actually say RBGH-free on their labels, Monsanto came in and sued them. And now companies are putting that disclaimer on there to meet Monsanto's very unlegal and inappropriate requirements. But then Monsanto got some states to actually implement a requirement that dairies put that disclaimer on there. In fact, Ohio right now has a horrible law which specifies the font size and the location of the disclaimer in such a horrible way that some companies are saying that they'd rather take the RBGH-free claim altogether off of their milk carton rather than having to fulfill that requirement. And that means any national brand that's sold in Ohio has that problem. So it really is a problem. We're actually trying to convince the governor of Ohio to change his mind immediately so we don't lose the traction that we've gained all these years. The junk food eating couch potato in America does not know that he or she is eating GMOs and will never know that we got rid of it for them, because it only takes a small percentage to reject GMOs in the marketplace. We don't need to inform everyone. In fact, there are so many people receptive to our message, we can get rid of GMOs without having to convince anyone who is resistant. There is, in fact, an economic divide between those that can afford organic and those that can't. Those in inner cities don't have access to fresh vegetables and fruits very often. But as far as GMOs go, I'm optimistic that we can get rid of them so quickly that it won't be a problem for very long. Of all of the toxins that are released into the environment, GMOs are of a special class. You see, with genetic engineering, you have pollution of the gene pool. It's a self-propagating genetic pollution. The genes that we released in this generation already can outlast nuclear waste. They can go on forever. We have no technology to fully clean up this type of pollution. Certainly we can reduce it dramatically, but until we have some technique to identify GMOs at a distance, we are stuck with GMOs possibly forever. Imagine being hired by a company that says, we have a little problem, we'd like you to organize the recall of our salmon from the ocean. There's a company that wants to introduce genetically modified mosquitoes. Imagine trying to do a recall there. GM pollen has already contaminated the indigenous corn varieties of Mexico, and we have no technology to clean that up. What we've done is irreversible damage, and this is something that is highly irresponsible, unconscionable. And it was done over the objections of scientists, over the objections of science, a collusion between government and industry. If you look back at the records of what actually happened at the FDA in 1991 and 92, the scientists were very clear. They said GMOs could create higher levels of existing toxins, new toxins, they might bioaccumulate toxins from the environment, that might produce allergies or new diseases or nutritional problems. They said the process of genetic engineering is different and leads to different risks. So what did the government say? The government said, we know of no significant differences, we know of no significant risks. Completely lying about what actually was said within the department. The first genetically modified crop to be reviewed by the FDA was the Flavor Saver tomato, engineered for longer shelf life. And that was the only company that actually gave raw feeding study data to the FDA to evaluate. It turns out the rats refused to eat the tomato. Now, this is not uncommon. In fact, eyewitness reports from all over North America and around the world show that a variety of animals, when given a choice, avoid eating GMOs. Cows, pigs, squirrels, geese, elk, deer, raccoons, mice, rats, chickens, and buffaloes. So it's my job to get humans up to the level of animals. When they force-fed the rats the tomatoes, 7 of 20 developed stomach lesions, 7 of 40 died within 2 weeks. Now, if you look at the data that was recovered from a lawsuit from within the FDA, they're clear that there were unanswered questions related to safety and that the tomatoes did not meet their normal standard of reasonable certainty of no harm. But the political appointees did not put up any red flag to block the tomatoes. In fact, they said that the tomatoes passed with such flying colors that no subsequent GM application is going to even require the level of evaluation that the tomatoes had. From that point on, it was purely a voluntary consultation process where the companies can choose if they wanted to even talk to the FDA, and they could determine what data, if any, they were to turn over to the FDA. And it's always been summary data, not enough to properly evaluate safety. If the reviewers want more information and ask for it, they're typically ignored. And at the end of the exercise, they write a letter. For example, a letter to Monsanto which says, Monsanto believes its foods are safe and understands it's its responsibility to make that determination. So the FDA has no further questions. The FDA does not even approve GM crops. They let the companies do it themselves. When you look at the actual research that's done by the companies, they have rigged their research to avoid finding problems. Even very serious problems, even deaths of animals, are dismissed as not statistically significant or not biologically significant or not treatment related without scientific justification. I've analyzed with many, many scientists around the world how these biotech companies have bad science down to a science. They use the wrong controls, the wrong detection methods, the wrong statistics, the wrong reporting protocols. It's absolutely horrendous. I'll give you some examples. When Monsanto wanted to pretend that injecting cows with bovine growth hormone did not interfere with the fertility of cows, stolen documents from the FDA made public revealed that they apparently added cows secretly to the study that were pregnant before injection. When researchers wanted to prove that pasteurization destroys bovine growth hormone in milk, they pasteurized the milk 120 times longer than normal. They only destroyed 19% of it. So they added powdered hormone to the milk at huge volumes and then heated it 120 times longer than normal. And only under that rigged condition did they destroy 90% of the hormone. But that's what the FDA reported, that pasteurization destroys 90% of the hormone. That's just an example of what we read over and over again. And sometimes it's very subtle, and sometimes it's very, very blatant lies and misinformation. Because GMOs are not labeled, it's hard to file a lawsuit, because it's hard to trace back who's eating GMOs and who's not. So it's one of the ways that the biotech industry protects itself, by not letting us know what is GMO and what is not. I've talked to some former Monsanto employees and got quite an interesting insight into the company. One scientist told me that his colleagues were doing safety studies on milk from cows injected with their bovine growth hormone. When they saw how much IGF-1, insulin-like growth factor 1, was in the milk, these three scientists refused to drink milk again unless it was organic. He also told me that there was a study that showed problems with rodents that were fed one of Monsanto's GM crops. So instead of withdrawing the crops, they decided to rewrite the study to make it look less of an adverse finding. A former salesman for Monsanto took the job because he was so impressed by the words of former CEO Robert Shapiro, who claimed that GMOs would help the world. And so when the employee orientation meeting happened in St. Louis, this man, Kirk Azevedo, stood up and described all these great things that Robert Shapiro had said. After the meeting, a vice president pulled him aside and said, "Wait a minute. What Robert Shapiro says is one thing, what we do is something else. We're here to make money. We don't even know what he's talking about." The FDA has proven to be a regulatory agency that has been hijacked by industry, both on the drug side and the food side. Many of the people that approved bovine growth hormone either worked for Monsanto directly or indirectly, and one person actually did research for Monsanto and then took over the department that evaluated her own research. As far as what we need an independent body to evaluate the safety of GMOs. We need generations of evaluating GMOs before they're put onto the market. You see, we're just babes in the woods in our understanding about the DNA, and we're making fundamental changes in an area that we have very little understanding of. We redefine what a gene is, how a DNA functions, every few months. And yet the science behind the genetic engineering of food is based on assumptions that have already been proven wrong 30 years ago. So we're in a situation right now where industry has pulled the wool over the eyes of the public and has millions of people that they support within the agricultural industry and with the academic side and, of course, within government that keep pushing the same myths. They give the myth that it's safe, that it's been proven safe, that it's precise technology, that it'll feed the world, that it's needed, and that it's here to stay. All of those things are false. In fact, it's a very dangerous technology fraught with unpredicted side effects. It hasn't been proven safe. In fact, the industry research is rigged to avoid finding problems. And FDA doesn't require a single piece of research for safety. It's unreliable. It can easily be withdrawn in terms of, well, it can be stopped, but it won't be 100% withdrawn from the genetic pollution. But we can do a good job there too. Henry Miller used to work for the FDA and said to the New York Times that Big Ag has gotten everything they have asked or told the regulatory agencies to do. And that's the way it is. Big Ag, big corporations, it's hard to define where corporations end and where the government starts. There's a connection there which is extremely unhealthy and could have long-term consequences, and already has long-term consequences. And GMOs are one of the most serious because it affects everyone who eats and all future generations and the entire ecosystem. What you see in genetic engineering is a pattern which is prevalent throughout the government, where corporations have influenced the regulations over themselves in such a way that they were given free rein to make big bucks without consideration for health and environmental consequences. And fortunately, from the side of GM food, it is easier to stop than the other major problems. It's easier to stop than problems that require policy change, because we can do it from the side of the market. Because people vote with their forks, they vote with their dollars, we can have a revolution in the kitchen. And that's what we're focused on. We realize, you know, I have a small NGO, small nonprofit organization. How can I go against the millions upon millions that Monsanto spends to lobby Washington, to buy and pay for elections, etc.? We can't. But we can go to consumers who are concerned about their health, to health-conscious shoppers, to parents of young kids, to doctors and their patients, to the general public where they're concerned about what they put in their mouths and the mouths of their families, and give them accurate, defensible information about why GMOs are unhealthy and why we shouldn't eat GMOs at all. And then give them a shopping guide, how to avoid eating GMOs. These are the tools to affect policy, at this point, greater than lobbyists, greater than money for campaigns. Because this is the tool that will get the food companies to kick out GMOs when they become a marketing liability. Years ago, they called 98% of the DNA junk genes, because they didn't code for proteins. They figured they were just a refuse pile of previously accumulated genetic material. Now they realize, oh, it's very important. They used to think that genes could be sorted and moved in any direction and anywhere on the genome because they acted independently. Now they realize that there are families of genes that work together as a network. They used to think that one gene produced one protein, produced one trait. That's false. So what we have here is an evolving understanding of the most fundamental level of biology. And yet the technology of genetic engineering is based largely on the false assumptions. Now, the fact that one gene does not produce one protein producing one trait in almost every case is why they've limited their genetic engineering to basically two traits, poison drinking and poison production. They can't easily create drought tolerance or salt tolerance or higher yields, because that involves a family of genes and a network of genes that we don't understand the language that they're speaking. But there's an arrogance that we can just go in there and try things and put it on the market without actually even testing the safety of the products that they're creating on animals or humans. They feed an animal GM crops for 90 days at low concentrations and figure if it passes 90-day test, then we can feed it to humans at high volume for the rest of their lives. It's complete arrogance and extremely dangerous. One of Monsanto's plans is to introduce Terminator technology. It's not yet introduced, but it can have a catastrophic effect on agriculture around the world. It's a technology that forces plants to grow sterile seeds so that farmers cannot plant them year after year. Now, Monsanto, when it was originally developed by a number of companies, including the USDA, they were targeting the developing countries where 1.4 billion farmers save their seeds. If there's changes in weather, if there's damage from insects or from disease, we have a huge diversity of plants growing on farmers' fields around the world. We can find the genetics to withstand these changes. But if you wipe out that diversity and limit it just to the few seeds that are available in the catalog, You are risking the entire population's food supply in order to promote the profits of these companies. So this is a huge and horrific mess. And the world has risen up against Terminator technology because they want to protect the ability of farmers to save seeds year after year and not turn them into bio-serfs where they go back and like a new bio-colonialism where the Monsantos of the world force farmers to buy seeds year after year in order to maintain a profit and a lifestyle. The Department of Justice and Department of Agriculture have teamed up to do an evaluation of whether the agriculture industry in the United States has reached a level of monopoly or a duopoly or whatever. And I certainly think that it's very, very dangerous right now, that it's too concentrated. They're controlling prices, they're controlling distribution, they're pushing their GM seeds, eliminating the availability of non-GM seeds, reducing the genetic diversity, and basically keeping farmers desperate. They're always removing enough money from the system to keep farmers desperate, which is one way that they apparently control them or convince them to keep doing whatever the next magic bullet is from Monsanto and these other companies. Contamination is a real serious issue. The biotech industry originally promised it would be impossible to contaminate. In fact, one executive from a company testified in Europe that you'd be more likely to get pregnant from a toilet seat than be contaminated by a GM crop. Now they've changed their tune and say, well, contamination is inevitable, but it's not important. It's very important. Contamination happens at a higher rate than anyone's predicted. Someone was looking at genetically modified alfalfa, which is out in very small quantities right now, because it was taken off the market, because it was approved illegally, but a small amount got on there. So someone was checking it in 2008. There was a 3% contamination of the 200 lots that he tested. In 2009, it was up to 12%. In canola, which cross-pollinates very easily and the seeds move by wind, they looked at 33 bags of non-GMO canola seed. 32 of the 33 had at least a very tiny amount of contamination. It is difficult to get clean seed in canola, a little bit less difficult in corn, a little bit less difficult in soy, depending on the cross-pollination. But you also have contamination year after year. You plant GM canola in 1 year, and if you plant non-GM canola, you'll still have over 1% contamination for the next 16 years because unharvested canola seed can drop and into the soil and germinate year after year, and they produce thousands of seeds, and they also partially drop and not get harvested. So there's a contamination over time. Then you have this bizarre, ridiculous movement to introduce pharmaceuticals and industrial chemicals grown inside the plant. And we've had a near miss a few years ago where there was corn varieties engineered to produce a vaccine for pig diarrhea. And the following year, the corn sprouted, the stubble remained inside a soybean field and was harvested, and they found that out just in time and saved it from the food supply. But I suspect that other of these industrial chemical producing crops have contaminated the food supply at some point. I think it's just ridiculous that they plant crops that produce pharmaceutical chemicals outdoors and in food crops. Years ago, there was a few countries in sub-Saharan Africa that had a famine, and so the U.S. sent genetically modified corn as a food aid. When they discovered it was genetically modified, they asked the U.S. to please substitute non-GM corn, and the U.S. refused. Some countries decided to accept it, but said, please mill it so it won't be in seed form so our farmers won't plant it. The U.S. said, tough. You have to eat it or starve. Fortunately, South Africa came in and milled it. But one country, Zambia, sent out a fact-finding team to the U.S. and Europe. And they came back, and for many reasons, including scientific reasons, they said, absolutely do not allow genetically modified corn to be distributed to the famine victims in this country. So they were able to find other sources of food. But this really upset the U.S. because the myth was that GMOs would feed the hungry world, and here was a hungry country saying no. So they did a full court press on Zambia, and I visited there and heard some of the stories. There was a couple of Jesuit priests who were talking at conferences about the inappropriateness of genetic engineered crops based on the statistics that they had gathered. So the U.S. government tried to stifle the Jesuit priests. Colin Powell contacted the Vatican, and someone else contacted the head of the Jesuits in the U.S., and they kept trying to, they were lying about what these Jesuit priests were saying. And I spoke to and interviewed one of the Jesuit priests. One of the ministers, I believe the Minister of Agriculture, was introduced to the minister, the Secretary of Agriculture in the U.S., Ann Veneman, and when she heard he was from Zambia, she just rebuffed him, saying, backward country, and walked away. They sent congressmen and senators and professors. It was like they were just doing their best to try and convince Zambia that genetic engineering was okay. But the Zambian people, the Zambian scientists, and the government held their ground. And I think it was a very smart idea, because, you see, those that get food aid, 90% of their caloric intake is the aid itself. So if the food aid was genetically modified BT corn or Roundup Ready corn, that means they were going to have a much higher level of this genetically modified crop in their system than any animal has ever been fed in a laboratory for a test. And if BT toxin does in fact disrupt the immune system or have toxic reactions or cause leaky gut or any of these things that it might do, then this particular population that's already malnourished and probably immune deficient would be just absolutely targets for a disaster. So I actually congratulated the government for finding other non-GMO foods when I was there, and went on national television and national radio saying, you know, thank you for fighting off the American bully in this case. A colleague of mine was debating a senior executive from USAID, which is a big pro-GM organization from the U.S. government. And they were debating in South Africa, and after the lights went down, the cameras stopped, they were continued to argue. And in the middle of this executive's anger, she let it loose, saying, you just wait. There'll be so much GM corn in South Africa, no one in Africa could plant non-GM corn. So this was an indication of their plan for contaminating the African continent. This was their plan. It's interesting that when it comes to safety regulations, the biotech industry insists that its crops are no different from conventional natural varieties. When it comes to patenting, they say, oh no, it's completely unique and worthy of patenting. Patenting of life, patenting of crops, these are real problems that have allowed the biotech juggernaut to take off and to sacrifice issues of health for profit. We need to re-examine and revoke this concept of patenting life, and also look at the way that they actually file patents on indigenous knowledge. Companies have tried to patent flour used for chapati breads in India, for neem in India, which is a natural product that's been developed for years, for basmati rice, for all these different things. They'll go in like bioprospectors and biopirates to steal some of the indigenous resources that have possibly been developed by farmers over generations. And because they discover some ways in which the characteristics work on a molecular level, they file a patent, and then they can sell the products of their patent back to the indigenous countries that developed it. So it's an absolutely unfair situation and needs to be looked at. Now, my focus is primarily the food safety. And I chose food safety because I believe that's the leverage to get rid of GMOs. You can be very against Monsanto. You can watch the World According to Monsanto and want to break something at the end of it. But it doesn't really speak so much about the health, so you don't realize that eating a corn chip might be just that bad, you know, and the soy might be just that bad. There's tremendous harm that can come from eating GMOs if you look at the animal feeding studies, the livestock issues, and what's happened in the U.S. since GMOs were introduced from a correlational side. So if you talk about the patent issue or the environmental issue or the social justice issue or corporate takeover, you can arouse anger in people, but they may just go out and buy a GMO and eat it. If you explain that eating a corn chip that's genetically engineered might turn your intestinal bacteria into living pesticide factories, then they put the brakes on for themselves and their family. And that is what's going to be leveraged for getting rid of GMOs, when people understand the health dangers and make healthier choices. The bees are dying in a thing called colony collapse disorder, which is not well understood. Now, it's, in my opinion, it's definitely not primarily caused by GMOs, because they're dying in large numbers in other countries where they don't plant GMOs. More recent information suggests that the seed treatments from neonicotinoid insecticides are the cause. Now, these are insecticides created from nicotine or tobacco. When biotech companies introduced a variety of BT corn that kills the rootworm, they found that it wasn't very effective for the first few weeks of the corn plant's life. So the rootworm or corn or soil-based organisms could destroy the seed and the early plant. So what they did is they developed a way to encapsulate a systemic insecticide based on tobacco called neonicotinoid insecticides and put them on the seeds, and the insecticide would then infiltrate into the seed and into the plant and exude out of all the different cells of the plant for several weeks. That way it would sort of do the job to protect against the soil-based organisms until the BT kicked in. But this neonicotinoid insecticide is known to disrupt the navigation ability and memory of bees, where they may not be able to get back to the hive. Now, it was believed that the seed treatments, that these type of seed treatments were responsible in large part or completely for colony collapse disorder. And when they banned these type of insecticides from several countries in Europe, like in Italy, the next year there was no colony collapse the next year, except in one hive where they used the old seeds that still had it. They couldn't figure out the vector, how it was that the bees were getting the seed treatment from the plants, until they discovered that plants, they exude a certain nectar or water that's concentrated with their nutrients in the morning, like dew, and these bees fan the hive to keep the air conditioning going all night, and they get exhausted, so they immediately leave the hive in the morning and go to the nearest source of nutrition, which is this nectar on the plants nearby. But this nectar or water contains the insecticide as well. So now they understand the vectors in terms of how these honeybees are getting large doses of this insecticide. And one of the characteristics of colony collapse disorder is that there's oftentimes no bees in the hive, that they go out and they don't come back. So we think that the neonicotinoid seed treatments, which were increased because of the use of genetic engineering, is probably responsible for, or at least in large part, of colony collapse disorder. But there are more deaths among the bees in the United States than in other countries. And we think that that increase might be the result of genetically engineered crops, particularly the BT toxin, which is designed to kill insects. It's not acutely toxic to bees, but in some studies, they found that the bees that grabbed pollen from the corn plants that were genetically engineered, they actually were susceptible to a viral infection, whereas the controls were not. There was another study that showed that when the bees took the pollen, the genes from the genetically modified crops transferred into the microorganisms inside the guts of the bees. This also happens in humans. This could mean long-term effects from short-term exposure. Genetically modified foods and crops are one of the most dangerous health and environmental catastrophes we're facing. And yet very few people know about it. There's very few money. There's very few organizations funding those of us who are trying to stop it. I mean, I struggle year after year with, you know, a skeleton crew. And I see things like global warming just pulling millions and millions of dollars, and we just get chump change and volunteers to try and stop this juggernaut. Fortunately, it's easier to stop GMOs than it is these other problems, because we don't have to affect government policy. We can do it through market choices. And that's what we plan to do.